Thanks for joining in today for another New Mexico Pediatric Society PEDX podcast. This is Melissa Mason, and I'm excited to be able to bring you this podcast today through support from the American Academy of Pediatrics Project First Line Grant. Today, I'll have the pleasure of having a conversation with Dr. Walter DeHoherty, who is a pediatric infectious disease specialist at the University of New Mexico Hospital. So, before we get started, Walter, I'd like to, and I'm calling you Walter because we did our training together and we've known each other for, I don't know, a few years.
Yeah.
But if you could just introduce yourself, just tell me a little bit about your day job and or something personal that you'd like to share.
Yeah, happy to. So I've been at the University of New Mexico now for almost 14 years. It's the only place I've worked after finishing my fellowship training. But I do a little bit of research, a little bit of teaching, and then seeing patients both in the hospital and the clinic. Personally, I'm most proud of my marriage to my wife and then our four daughters who are 9, 11, 13, and 15.
So you were not bored.
No, very busy.
Good. Well, today we're going to talk about COVID, a few things having to do with COVID, because what would a day be without talking about COVID these days? So I think something that is on the minds of a lot of people right now are the COVID vaccines, both for adults mm-hmm. and for kids. So, you know, as far as the vaccine goes, now that we've had access to it for a while, what do you think COVID vaccination might look like for the future?
Yeah, that's really hard to tell. There's several directions this could go. One would be it may start to look kind of like the flu shot. And right now, what they do with the flu shot is they look at what strains are circulating and they predict what strains need to go in a vaccine for the coming year. And they make and mass produce a bunch of flu vaccines, cross their fingers, and hope it's a good match with the strain that we actually see. We don't know if COVID is going to end up acting like the flu. We don't know how quickly these strains are going to come and go. We don't even really know the true seasonality, if there is any, for COVID. So one of the challenges is you might mass produce a COVID shot in the spring, make 100 million doses to release in the fall, like you would a flu shot, and then COVID doesn't surface in the winter and it surfaces in the late spring and early summer with a completely different variant that we didn't predict. A couple of other options might be multivalent vaccines, where you might try to have multiple strains like Delta and Omicron and something else in a vaccine. That would need to be tested, though. We need to actually determine which strains were most important, and is that multivalent shot as effective as the individual shots? I think nasal vaccination might also be something we could see in the future, where you get mucosal immunity in the nose right at the site of the actual infection.
That would be great. Many of my patients would jump for joy over another nasal vaccine.
And you're right. And the most important thing is not the mucosal immunity. It would be the lack of a needle stick, you know, for many of the kids. That's something to think about. And then I think also we would need to think about not only can we produce these vaccines, but how do we actually convince people they need them? Right now, if you look at the people that are eligible for an additional booster who are over the age of 50, only about 20% have signed up for that booster. So this could be a phenomenon like a tree falling in the forest with no one there to hear. We could come up with all these vaccines, but if no one's willing to take it, that's a whole nother issue.
Yeah, no, I talked to a lot of families about that, about when should we get the booster, should we get the booster? You know, one concern families have shared with me is, well, I know that they're eligible to get their first booster. It's been long enough, but should we wait until they're closer to going back to school? Should we, I mean, what do you, what would you tell a family who is wondering, well, should we wait till it's closer to the start of school?
In general, I say if you're eligible for a shot, you should probably just get the shot. There's so many moving parts and variables. You know, for example, do we wait for school? Do we wait for a new variant to emerge? Do we wait until transmission in our community is really high? Do we wait until a summer vacation to make sure we're healthy? There's so many different variables out there that I think it's impossible to take them all into account. I've known families that said they want to wait for school to get a shot, and then the child gets infected at summer camp. So my general advice is if you think your child's ready for a shot, go ahead and just do it when they're ready.
Okay, great. I guess another thing I saw recently was this concern that people who have had COVID, that they aren't really very well protected, particularly from the Omicron strain. And so I know a lot of people say, oh, well, we just had COVID 2 months ago, so we're good for a while. And that may not be the case.
Yeah, it may not. There is some data suggesting that the protection from a vaccine is a little longer lasting than you might see from an actual infection. And in addition, there's protection that you're getting against long COVID. So a natural or wild type infection puts you at a higher risk of long COVID problems that you're not going to see with a vaccine. So that's another issue. And again, another reason just to get vaccinated.
Yeah, and I think a very wise pediatric infectious disease doctor once said that at least with the vaccine, you know exactly what you're getting into your body.
Exactly.
Natural
right.
infection, who knows?
It's rolling the dice a little bit. Yeah.
Great. Well, you know, I'm a big proponent of vaccines, so I'm really hoping that our younger patients will have access to it soon. And the idea of having maybe a combination flu COVID vaccine is exciting. Having a nasal vaccine is really exciting. So I look forward to seeing what is in the future for us.
And the other thing I forgot to mention would be a universal COVID vaccine. So if you take a step back from SARS coronavirus 2 on the family tree, it is a sarbecovirus. And there's some investigation into making a vaccine against the entire sarbecovirus group, which would then include all the coronaviruses. So this would be a mother of all vaccines that would cover, in theory, any future strains that might arise. And so that would be the holy grail.
That's exciting.
There is work on that, probably a few years in the future, but that's something also to look forward to.
Well, my sense is we're probably going to be dealing with this for a few more years.
Yep.
So maybe that's, as you say, the holy grail. So take another step about how do we prevent infection? So obviously, I think vaccination is probably the most important step, but, you know, masking is something that has been variously and intermittently implemented. But tell me, how do you feel like, you know, wearing a face mask comes into play with protecting ourselves and other people?
Yeah, I think face masking is something that will probably always be an option that we can consider. Mm-hmm. Hopefully we won't get to the point where we have mandatory face masking for very long periods of time, but there is data and ongoing data that's showing that face masks in schools do seem to work. If you look at schools that had face mask mandates versus those that had optional face masking, the schools with face mask mandates had significantly lower cases of secondary transmission. So we may get to the point where this is a, in case of emergency break glass type measure, where in a particular county, in a particular state, at a particular time of year, with a particular variant, if cases get to a critical threshold, rather than shut the school down, the masks go back on. And maybe it's for a couple of months until cases drop, the hospitals can decompress a little bit, and then that's a way to keep the kids in school. Because I know no one really likes face masks, but I think most people would also agree they would prefer to have face masks than virtual school.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, and I think that would be a lot more acceptable to a lot of people to know that this is a very temporary measure and that it's not indefinite.
Right. No, 100%. Yeah. And I think that's the best way to look at it. Is this something we're doing as a community for a little bit of time to try to protect others, but it's not going to be a permanent way of life.
Yeah. Nobody likes being told you have to do this forever.
Yep.
So, okay, great. So with regard to trying to keep people from getting sick and trying to keep people from sharing it, what actions do you feel like are really ingrained in our society because of this pandemic that we should try to maintain? And are there any we can get rid of?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. I think if you want to be an optimist, you could think about good things that came out of the pandemic.
Okay.
And I think there's a few things that we probably should have been doing all along, but the pandemic has now made them socially acceptable. So for example, hand sanitizer. I think 5 years ago, if you pulled hand sanitizer out of your purse, for example, people would think you are high maintenance, you're a hypochondriac. No one bats an eye anymore, right?
Yeah,
everyone has hand sanitizer.
What's wrong with you?
Yeah. And that's a good thing, right? Yeah. The fact that it's okay to have hand sanitizer in your car and to pull it out of your purse is actually a good thing. I think the ability to wear a face mask in the grocery store is a good thing. 5 years ago, it was no one had a face mask, and it was very frequent you would see someone in the produce aisle coughing, for example, right? Or people would show up to work and and be coughing. And no one wore a face mask. It was weird. Now it's socially acceptable. In fact, if you see someone coughing in the grocery store or Costco, you think, what is wrong with you if they don't have a mask on? And so that's a good measure, that removal of that barrier where it's okay to put a mask on if you're coughing. And the third thing, I think, is the ability to call in sick from work or school. In the old days, you just showed up. And I was guilty of this. I showed up all the time with a cough and a fever and a runny nose. The perfect attendance award at schools, I think, needs to disappear. Whenever I would see a kid at an assembly get a perfect attendance award, I would think this is a kid who probably showed up to school sick multiple times. And many schools are phasing that out in favor of saying, you know, it's okay to stay home if you're sick, provided you have the means and resources to do that. And so those are three things that I think have become socially acceptable in the pandemic, which we should probably try to keep. But I think also there's a paranoia sometimes that we probably don't need to keep. Fomites are sort of contact spread of diseases. COVID isn't really spread so much through fomites. So I will occasionally see families that will spend hours washing down doorknobs and having their house fumigated and stuff. And that's probably not necessary. Wiping down grocery items after you get back from the store was something that was done early on in the pandemic. But I don't think we need to live with that level of hyper scrutiny.
Good, good. Well, just circling back a little bit to staying home when you're sick, I think as medical providers, as you said, we're not very good at that. Mm-hmm. So, and you don't have to answer this if you don't want to, but since March of 2020, have you stayed home sick?
Good question. Since March of 2020, I have rarely been sick.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of that is because I do much more virtual work and I wear a mask everywhere, as does everyone else. But I have stayed home a couple of days when I was sick, actually, which is something I probably wouldn't have done in the past.
I know. I mean, I always, of course, especially I feel like working with kids, we wash our hands, we sanitize all the time. So I know that that helps. But the one thing I have noticed that's been a little bit different is I'm much more aware of family members watch me wash my hands before I examine their kids, which I think is kind of fascinating. I mean, I think some people kind of paid attention before, but it's been really interesting to me to actually see this renewed interest in hand washing, which I think is great and I think should stick around.
100% agree. It's simple, it's free, and it's very effective.
Yeah. So I'd like to go back to talk a little bit more about vaccines. We know that they work and it's exciting to have some options, but something that I think a lot of us deal with in our day-to-day is vaccine hesitancy and questions that families have, whether they're totally appropriate and make sense or, you know, way out in left field. Can you give some guidance to providers who are really doing their best to try to answer those questions, to try to support families, and ultimately to try to get as many people vaccinated and therefore hopefully protected as possible?
Yeah. I think that one of the most important things to think about is this isn't your grandfather's vaccine hesitancy. So we kind of grew up, if you're of a certain generation, with the Andrew Wakefield, Jenny McCarthy, vaccines cause autism type thing.
Yeah.
And then the mercury and conspiracy theories and things, those folks are still out there, but actually they kind of make up a very tiny minority now. This is really a new, very heterogeneous phenomenon where you have some folks that are concerned about side effects. Some think they don't need the vaccine. Some think that COVID isn't really that serious. Some do this for political reasons.
Yeah.
Some might get themselves vaccinated, but not their kids. Some don't want to inject their younger kids, but not their older kids. It's really messy and complex. And so I think that's the first thing to realize is don't walk into a room and think that there's a one-size-fits-all vaccine hesitancy.
Mm-hmm.
The take-home from that, that you can take away from that, is that the quote-unquote solution or the way to address this is also messy and not a one-size-fits-all. So I think it's that age-old problem of really having a dialogue with the family in the room, finding out where they're coming from in a very limited amount of time, especially in a primary care setting. It may be something that has to be done over several visits if there's a real problem, and it's not something that you can address early and quickly head on. The other thing that I have found helpful is to realize that most families are actually coming at this from a reasonable standpoint. They're worried about their child, and they may be worried about the side effects or whether they really need the vaccine. They're worried about heart problems and whatnot. And so even though from our standpoint as a busy clinician, we may get frustrated, if we stop and think about it from their standpoint, they're just trying to protect their kid.
I mean, they're bringing the most important thing in their lives to you, and they want to feel as good and comfortable as they can about what they're going to
do. And this is a brand new thing. It's a brand new vaccine. It's only been around for a little over a year. So it's a little more understandable that way. And so that helps me have a little more compassion and empathy, slow down and be a little patient when I'm answering some of these questions.
Right, because most of these people are not outright refusing, right? Because they're really not going to gain ground with people who were just absolutely not going to do it. But we're really talking about people who are hesitant because they either have heard or read things that may or may not be true, or they're just not sure, they want more information.
Right. The fixed thinker crowd is actually probably less than 5% of folks. And those are the people that might have a conspiracy theory or just dead set against it. That's actually a minority of people. Most people have some foot in the door where they're willing to at least entertain the idea of getting a COVID vaccine. The other thing that is a positive is, as a result of all this, there is a lot of research going on into this new vaccine hesitancy. So there are studies here at UNM that we're helping participate in where we have an app on a mobile phone to try to address vaccine hesitancy. There are experiments with social media, using TikTok and Twitter, monitoring social media for misinformation and trying to address it head on, developing resources that pediatricians can use. So hopefully in the coming years, there will be some evidence-based tools that we can use in our practices to try to address this new vaccine hesitancy.
When you're speaking with a family, do you have any websites or resources that you refer them to get more credible information on vaccines?
That's a good question. I think that there are some great resources. For example, the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia website is really good. The CDC has good information. But I do think we need to probably take a step back and do a little more research and thinking about what is the best way to convey that information. Is everyone actually going to go to the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia website or the CDC website and read all that information? Maybe yes, maybe no, right? And I think we need to do a better job of asking that. You know, we make all these recommendations. Is anyone actually following through on it? And that may be where some of this research comes in. Instead of something like that, we refer them to a TikTok video that's just been posted or some other social media content that might be a little more palatable for them.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense now that you say that. I was working with a parent who has a child with special healthcare needs, and we were talking about resources, and she said, look, if I can't find what I need in about 8 seconds, I'm going somewhere else. So I think there's a lot of value to what you just said.
And I think about to put it in my own perspective. I'm a little biased with medical stuff, but you know, for example, if my car is broken down, I'm the same way. If I can't find an answer in a few minutes, I get frustrated and I give up. And I often choose the first thing that pops up on a Google search. You know, like my oil is leaking. It's the first thing I click on, which is exactly the same thing our parents do. Yeah. And it's completely understandable. And again, thinking about it from a non-medical perspective helps me to put myself in their shoes and understand where they're coming from.
No, I think that's really important. So basically the take home is try to figure out where they're coming from, what information do they need, and can you help them find that quickly to help them make the best choice they can for their child?
Exactly right. And keep that dialogue open at all times.
Okay. So we've gotten through the meat, the really important information. I have a question and then we're going to play a really quick game of would you rather.
Great.
So my question for you is, what is the strangest conspiracy theory or kind of vaccine hesitancy or refusal reason that you have heard so far?
Yeah, I would say no question. There was a mother who came in and claimed that there was a government conspiracy to use vaccines to inject HIV into children. and that it was a massive cover-up from the top highest levels of the government. And I told her, I explained for several minutes how that was highly unlikely to be the case. And then she very logically said, yes, but if that were true, you also would probably be kept in the dark from this and would be unaware of it. And the only people that would know would probably be the leaders of our government. And I had to admit that was actually probably correct. If there was that extensive of a cover-up, I would not be involved. So,
well, this is true, but you would probably also be seeing a lot more patients if this were.
That is true. Yeah.
Okay. So I had one, the parent was adamant that he did not himself want to get a flu vaccine because it would make him magnetic, and the government placed microchips in the flu vaccine. So he refused it, but it was fine for me to go ahead and vaccinate his child.
I see. So he could become an X-Man or something with superpowers. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I'm just going to let you choose one.
Okay. I'll choose the one on the end here.
Okay.
I'm going to have you read that. I don't have my reading glasses with me.
Okay. All right. So would you rather backpack around the world for 6 months with very little money or stay at a luxurious resort, all expenses paid, for 2 weeks?
I would probably, everything else aside, backpack for 6 months. I think that would be more fun and more adventurous. Assuming someone would watch my kids and cover my practice.
Oh, you're not going to take them with you?
If it's a 6 month backpacking, probably not.
Okay. If I could get 6 months off, I think that would be fantastic. So I think for reality today, I'm going to go for the 2 weeks in the hotel.
Makes sense.
All right. Now I'm going to choose one. Oh, would you rather have 50 turtles living in your house or 100 canaries living in your house?
I'm going to go with the canaries. I think I would enjoy the singing. And I think there'd be less salmonella risk as an infectious disease doctor.
See, I was not approaching it from that standpoint. I would go with the turtles because they're very quiet.
That's a good point, yes. You could sleep at night.
Well, Dr. Dougherty, I really appreciate you sitting down with me today and sharing your knowledge and recommendations. We may have to have a renewed, revamped podcast at some point, hopefully with some new recommendations. But thank you, and thanks for all the work that you do. You make a difference, and you help us do our day jobs better. So,
my pleasure. Thank you.
This podcast is edited by Juan Pablo Avellan and produced at Here Kitty Studios.